But you did actually save them in the end. Do you remember when he throws the Emperor
off
the...
Yeah, doesn't that mean Johnny Sexton kills him?
Well, he kind of did.
Yeah. Never trust the quiet one.
Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello and very welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. For anyone watching at home, as you can clearly see, we have an extra long chaise longue style couch here that Jerry is lorded out on. Reason being is that we have two very special guests coming on the show this week. We have, all the way from Wales, Welsh legend Shane Williams, as well as Irish legend Ronan O'Gara, coming in for a big long chat. They're on the way as we speak. We had to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning to to satisfy their early start this morning, which was hell on earth. Yeah. We moved the twins out of our room for the first time last night.
Mummy and daddy getting action again.
That was the plan.
Getting back on the horse.
Yeah, but
I'm not saying Orin is a horse.
I'm a horse. Those monitor things, man. Jesus, they were kicking off.
You don't need a monitor. You can hear them. When they scream, you can hear them.
No, she was insisting on having the monitor. I didn't sleep a wink. I literally haven't slept a wink all night.
Yeah. It was...
Jerry had a great sleep on the way up in the car. Thank you very much. Yeah.
Listening to another one of Ogara's podcasts.
Yes, he put us to sleep. But yeah, you've experienced that, obviously. Is Katie out the gap with you, or is she still in there?
Yeah, Katie's about 7 months now, and she started, the stage she's at is scrabbing.
Scrapping?
Scrabbing. Vicious, grabbing stuff, like people's faces.
Right.
And then Anna said, she turned around the other day, she's at a mother and toddlers thing, and then Katie was fish hooking this other child. So it must be the stages. 6 months you sit, 7 months you fish hook, and then 9 months you start crawling.
Oh, she's developing so well. Yeah, how's her fish hook? Well, look, we've loads to get through. We've got the lads on in about 10 minutes, but I think it's time to get into the Guinness Six Nations. We'll just jump straight in. Trimby Phillips.
I've got a hot take on Ireland Scotland at the weekend.
Go on.
So I watched the game and I felt a little bit frustrated. I felt like we weren't as penetrative as we might have been, and we weren't as cohesive as we might have been, and we made it a bit of a battle. And I know O'Mahony took exception to the win being described as stuttering to a win. Stuttering, huh?
Yeah.
He didn't like that.
Did not like that.
No, but I felt like overall it wasn't an amazing performance. It was enough to get the job done. But I thought individually, I watched the game twice. When did I ever watch games twice?
Never.
Watched it twice, and on second watch, there were a lot of individual, really good individual performances, but for some reason, it was nowhere near as fluid a performance, and defensively, probably wasn't as dominant as we would like it to be either. So I can't put my finger on it, but I thought Tyke Furlong was class. I thought Handy, James Ryan, both good. Back row, CJ, like, he was incredible, and he's been the one everybody's been questioning. Mm. Pete off the bench, brilliant as well, CJ. I'm trying to think. I thought Henshaw, when he came off the bench, was class. Mm-hmm. Although Bundy did really well as well. Back three, I thought there were a lot of really good performances, but there was just something
about it.
Scotland, to be fair, turned up massively. They were so up for it. It looked like they were really ready to go to battle. Mm. But yeah, and then they should have won, obviously, if Hogg had got that try in the corner.
Mm. They underperformed so much at the World Cup that they would have to be. Hogg looked visibly so up for the
game.
Didn't
he? Yeah, he did.
Apart from when he dropped the ball. You see when he was going in to drop, as he was dropping the ball, one of the Scottish replacements went this way. No, and kind of like, yay.
Hogg celebrating was brazen, like, as if they're going to go, oh, he must have got it.
Oh, well, will we check this? No, look at his face. Look at that smile.
Was that Stockdale corner? Was that the drop corner?
Could be, it was. Yeah. Drop corner.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. Could be.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. I thought it was the other end.
Maybe. Anyway.
I thought Jordan Larmour played very, very well.
Yeah. He did.
I thought Herring worked really hard and worked like worked on, like added some good continuity, and the Irish lineout worked really well.
Yeah.
I thought CJ was top class. I thought Johnny Sexton was excellent. Bundiaki is a lovely buffer of physicality. When there's nothing really on, you can just give him the ball and he'll get you go forward.
See on CJ, is there something in that where Pro 14 and European rugby is I'm not even saying it's a different level, it's just a different type of game. And then Test Match Six Nations rugby is your first criteria is you win collisions and you get gain lines and you smash people in defence. So someone like Max Deegan, Keelan Doris, these guys are all singing, all dancing. They look class when they're playing in blue, but it needs a CJ when you get to Six Nations level. Is that, or is that too simplistic?
There's going to be, if you're playing for Leinster, you're generally, your team is going to be a lot better than the other teams you're playing the majority of times as well. So mm-hmm. that gives you an advantage. But I also think, yeah, there's way less space at test level. So if there's more space at Pro 14 in Europe, then you can get your hands free. You can, you know, keep the ball alive a bit easier, and you can look a little bit more, you know, look like you're winning the collisions more. But when there's less space, it just becomes down to bone on bone, and that's where CJ kind of comes into his own there. But people also get frustrated. They go, oh, it's just so predictable. But like when there is no space, you need people who can get you a little bit of go forward and retain the ball, and CJ does that really well, and he's a huge work rate.
Yeah.
The difference between CJ and someone like Billy Vonopola is CJ is shorter. He doesn't have the same levers that Billy Vonopola has to get his arms free and keep the ball alive. But he's, you know, people don't appreciate him until he's not there.
Yeah.
What are you laughing at?
No, I'm just laughing at Pat walking out in the middle of the show. Oh,
Pat. See you, Pat. Defensively, when you say we weren't probably where we should have been, is that strategically, or we were soaking a lot of tackles, right?
I thought so. I think it's because, not always actually, to be fair, I don't want to contradict myself, but a lot of Scotland's phase play was really good. A lot of their breakdown work was really good. Now, CJ got over the ball, Pete got over the ball, Josh, all of them did really well at times, actually, strangely, off a couple of line breaks, which is the last time you expect someone to get over the ball, and the boys got back and did really well. But for long periods, their breakdown was quite good and they kept the tempo going. Those little kind of change of directions off nine.
Ali Price and George Horn are so good at playing.
Yeah.
You can go on autopilot in defence if a team keeps coming around the corner and you just keep getting around, getting numbers around the corner. No, you don't even have to ID where the attack is because you just know that they're coming. But when a team keeps coming back against the grain, that's when you create mismatches all the time, because people get, oh, we'll just get around the corner and we'll fill the field on the far side because we'll be down numbers. But then when Ali Price bounces back all the time, that's, you know, and George Horn does it really well.
And because they're a threat themselves as well, more difficult to defend.
Okay, going into Wales this weekend, obviously they...
We're speaking really fast because we know that we've got a lot to squeeze in.
We don't have time. They could potentially be even more of a threat, Josh Adams and I suppose the amount of nines they have at the moment. Dan Beaver playing pretty well. That's going to be a big threat at the weekend. You know?
Yeah, I think it's really hard to know.
Slowing ball down and stop soaking tackles.
It's hard to know where Wales are because it leaders didn't turn up, and that's not a gauge at all of where Wales are at, is it?
No, yeah, you're right.
It's
difficult because
they were good though.
I think Franco Smith, the Italian coach, is a brilliant coach. He's brilliant. And any team that Franco Smith coaches, you can see his philosophy, but it's a very much an attacking philosophy, 100%. And if you look at how they defended at times, and even the fact that they had Tommaso Allan at 10 and they had Carlo Canna at 12, like Canna is not a hugely physical 12. And then you have, like, to have him there, and then, like, you have the exact opposite of him as a player in Hadley Parks opposite, you know, marking him. I think that it was just a mismatch from the start. Mm. And I think Italy are going to struggle because, like you said, there's going to be less space at test level. So that means that your set piece, your kicking game and your defence needs to be really, really good, and you need guys that can win collisions. You can't just, like, Franco Smith, like when he coaches the Cheetahs, they just have this amazing offloading game and they play really, really expansive rugby and really clever rugby. But when there isn't that much space, it's difficult to do it. So I don't think Italy, I think Italy may struggle in the Six Nations if they don't adapt very, very quickly.
Ireland in attack then, criticised again for kicking box kicks. I think in fairness they'd only had five or six, but it was the lack of return off any of them. You could actually hear Quinny in the Cole Collins, did you hear that? You could hear him under his breath going, stop kicking the fucking ball. It's hilarious. So is it a means of varying our kicking, or we got to exit in some way, put the ball into the stands more often?
You have to kick the ball, but the Scottish Scotland escorted very, very well, and then they got caught a couple of times for illegal escorts. And I thought Andrew Conway did a great job on... Did you notice when he did get escorted, if he got hit with his upper body, he left his legs go forward, so he went back. So it wasn't like he just got nudged. It looked like a very clear... He made it really apparent to the referee.
It was more convincing than Johnny's broken jaw.
yeah.
Was it?
But I thought that...
Let's not talk about that.
sorry. I think you have to kick the ball in rugby. You have to have the ability to kick the ball. Ideally, you can kick the ball and get the ball back on your terms.
Conway's contribution is enormous, though. Yeah. Chasing as hard as you possibly can. That sounds so simple. It adds a lot. Mm. One or two of Murray's went a little bit long, a little bit infield.
But the thing is as well, is the nines are under more pressure now to get the ball away. The referees are telling them to use it.
Yeah.
Rather than letting you build the ruck so you can kick it. And kick it like under no pressure. They're under the pump to get the ball and get it moved out of the ruck quickly. And if they have to kick, the base isn't as solid for them. So that's why there's a lot more pressure on the nines to be to try and be as accurate
and
as
then
they used
the
to.
The other one, Conway, was just a little bit didn't quite get there in time. He knew he couldn't get up to compete, but he knew he could slap the ball, and he got done for a knock on. But that could have I don't know if that was forward, that one. Mm. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
No.
Mm. And I just remember being a receiving winger, receiving that ball, and someone just flaps their hand just right in front of your face as the ball's coming down. Even if you don't go anywhere near the ball, that's really, really difficult. You may as well. Conway's so good at that. If he's not, he just always gets the best of a bad situation. Yeah. Either he'll get right in the air, compete really well, or he'll just make it difficult. But he is so committed, and that's so valuable to the team, I think.
I think anyone that looked at the Irish game and is critical of it has to take into consideration. Now, I know that there's been changes in pretty much all the coaching teams. Like Wales have a new coaching team. England, under Eddie Jones, have a lot of new assistant coaches. France have a new coaching side. And to be fair, they're Sean Edwards... Their tackle entry, their body shape into the tackling in England was phenomenal. They played really, really well. And then Ireland with a new coaching side as well, and Italy with Franco Smith coming in. So there's a lot of change there, but there's only so much that you can actually alter, because you have a couple of sessions coming into the Six Nations, and you've got to train. Everyone wanted to see our attack and our kicking game change a little bit. But you've still got to train scrums, lineouts, restarts, defence. They all take up a certain amount of time. So I think the main thing is get a win, and then you can start building layers on that. And that's what I think we definitely will have to play a lot better against Wales. But I thought there was a lot of character shown. I thought Scotland showed up, like we said at the start.
Yeah.
No, a win's a win. Take it. Speaking of which, we also need to acknowledge the brilliant wins for Ireland under 20s and women against the Scots on Friday. Did you see the 20s? Very impressive. Yeah. Jack Crowley got a pretty sensational try. Sean O'Brien won. And Thomas O'Hearn.
Thomas O'Hearn, one to watch for the future.
Yeah,
brilliant. His quality.
And the ladies beating Scotland 19-13 with Bevan Parsons scoring a brilliant intercept try, and Senan Uwapu celebrated her 36th birthday. Fan of the show.
Yeah.
Former guest on the show.
Right.
She scored Ireland's first try, and Cliona Maloney scored the second one. But we'll take a quick break now, and I think we will have Shane Williams and Raj on the couch straight after this.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Now, ahead of this weekend's Ireland versus Wales match in the Guinness Six Nations, we are delighted to be joined by two former international rugby players and sometimes rivals, Ronan O'Gara and Shane Williams, who are hosting the second Guinness Six Nations experience tonight, which involves having a go at a goal-kicking challenge on a simulator in a Cork courtyard in Sober Lane in Cork.
Yeah. That's going to go well, isn't it?
Yeah, go. Are you renowned for your goal kicking?
Oh, yeah. Renowned. But yeah, I didn't kick, I didn't pass. Yeah, so this might be fun.
Yeah, notice it's not like a
one-on-ones in 20 metres of space.
Exactly.
Gavin Henson must have been busy, was he? Yeah. Mike Phillips was disappointed, actually. He fancied himself.
He couldn't kick the skin off of it.
No. Could Mike at least give him your left foot?
It's
would that be probably better as well?
It's good the way things are kind of on home soil. Things are in Cork, yeah. Weighted nicely in my favour.
Yeah.
So
well, we did a live show from Cork last week, and we did a stitch together a Star Wars analogy. Now I know you have no clue about Star Wars, but we did say that you were the Darth Vader. In our Star Wars, and didn't get a very good response. The Cork crowd were like, whoa.
What's Darth Vader?
He's the bad guy.
What's Darth Vader? Jeez, that's some start.
It's a detergent. You use it to get stains on your clothes.
I know Darth Vader.
Use Darth Vader.
I don't know what it's...
He was the bad guy, right? But the reason he was the bad guy, he used to be the good guy. He was the saviour, and then he went to the dark side, like you went to
Leinster,
to New Zealand.
Oh, that's the good side.
In our analogy, that was the bad side, because Ireland, it was the Ireland versus the All Blacks, is the good side versus the dark side. And you were Darth Vader, being Luke Skywalker's father, who is Johnny Sexton. And but you did actually save them in the end. Do you remember when he chose... Throws the Emperor off the...
Yeah, doesn't that mean Johnny Sexton kills him?
Does he? Yeah. Kind of did.
Yeah. Never trust the quiet one.
This went out on Instagram. Just that bit. And it was basically him talking. And I was just interrupting every now and again. And then the first comment underneath, like 30 seconds after it was posted... Is this supposed to be funny?
Oh, God. I didn't see that.
I think it was
No, it wasn't.
Just us enjoying it and everyone else kind of tolerating it and waiting for Fla and Eddie and Ali to get out.
You can't win, though, isn't it?
No.
One of the key components of life is just don't really read those comments. Back your instincts. Get on with it, Trimby.
Yeah, Trimby.
No, it was him I was offended for. I tried to endear myself to the Cork crowd by saying how much of a Rog supporter I was. There's Humphreys Northerners and there's Raj Northerners. And now I'm not going to say I'm exclusively Raj.
No, you can't be. But you prefer me than Johnny, obviously.
Than Johnny?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez, I thought it was Humph.
Ah, that's well over, isn't it?
Yeah, you won that battle a while back.
And what are you saying about the other battle?
Ah, jeez, you're just different.
You both had qualities.
Well, look, we're delighted to have you both here. Shane... you've had an unbelievable career with Ospreys, Wales, Lions, went to Japan, had a little time up in Donegal with Glenn Swilly, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then finished up in back in your own club in Amman in Wales. How is life for you now?
What was that club's name?
Amman, wasn't it?
Amman, yes.
Amman, yeah. Sorry.
Well-travelled.
Well-travelled, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And... how's life for you now? Where are you based and what are you up to?
Yeah, oh, good, really. There's always that worry when you come into the end of your rugby career that you're not going to be busy enough. But it's just been crazy, absolutely crazy. Travelled the world, lucky enough to have started my own businesses back home and keeping the rugby as well. So, yeah, I'll be working on the weekend commentary for the Ireland-Wales game. Spent a bit of time this week in Dublin, pottering around. So, yeah, life's good. Haven't seen Rog and you guys for a while as well, so it's nice to bump into you boys.
Oh, yeah. What age did you finish playing rugby?
I have to work this out now. It was in 2005, so I was 37.
That's some innings.
Yeah, well, I finished professional in 2012 with the Ospreys and ended up just randomly going to Japan to represent a team called the Mitsubishi Heavy Industry Dynamos. I'm glad I got that right in the first
I remembered
goal.
Ammon. I had that one written down.
Yeah,
just to give back to the game.
Just to give back, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, as all the other guys, Dankard and Manonu and Sonny Bill and these boys have done, you've got to give
Shane
back to
Williams,
the game, yeah.
Same level.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was good fun. That was something I'd never thought I'd get the opportunity to do.
It's because you're so professional. That's why you play for so long, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I'm thinking in particular of there was a fixture was cancelled with the Ospreys, and then whatever way it happened, you had to play in midweek. So you did like an Irish tour. Remember this?
Yeah, yeah.
But you were kind of just playing, not training, and you're kind of boozing in between games because I know Humph, again, two reference for Humph. He was our DOR at the time. He arrived at the swimming pool the next morning after the game and he thought, geez, these boys are professional. He's up at 8 o'clock, he's doing his pool recovery. He was still drinking at 8 o'clock because he hadn't been to bed.
We hadn't been to bed, yeah, I remember that vividly. We went on and I think we won the league that year as well. Yeah. Which is, you know, not that it's a good example for the kids or anything, but yeah, that's right. We came over here and ended up staying because we had like three games in a week or something. And then we won the two games out of the three and ended up winning the league, I think. So it was just a bizarre. But we had those players in the squad, you know. We had the likes of obviously Mike Phillips and Lee Byrne and people like Jerry Collins and these guys that were old school, you know, play hard, but you know, enjoy yourself as well at the same time. And just you front up in the morning.
Yeah.
But yeah. Don't do that, kids.
Yeah. Do you remember when you look at the team that you had there? Like, you had Adam Jones. Hibbert was coming through at the time. Mm. You had Hugh Bennett. You had Alan Wynne-Jones. And I suppose Marty Holler was unbelievable back then before Justin Tipperick came through. You know, Tommy Bowe, Dan Bigger. You had a phenomenal team. Do you think he actually got enough out of it?
No, not at all. I think, we won a couple of Pro 12s at the time and... won some big games, really big games. But when we look back, I think we massively underachieved, especially in Europe. Two quarterfinals. I remember in 08, we played the Saracens after the Six Nations. And Lynn Jones, who was obviously the Ospreys coach, said, right, no Ospreys plays, just play as you did in the Six Nations. Because most of the team on the day was the starting Welsh team. And he said, just play your Welsh calls and your Welsh plays. We stuffed Saracens in the Millennium Stadium, or Principality Stadium now. And the following week, we went up to Watford, and we lost the game, and we were rubbish. We just massively folded before, the game had even kicked off. We just didn't. I just think we just didn't believe that we were good enough to win Europe. As simple as that. So in the Pro 12, we were doing particularly well. Winning away from home in Munster and Leinster and winning big local derbies. And then when we got to Europe, we just massively froze. We lost to Biarritz as well in the quarters where we were by far the better team. But, I didn't play particularly well. A lot of the big players didn't play particularly well that usually we used to play well. And, it was massively frustrating as well because we were good enough to do some damage in Europe. We had a great squad. We were the Galacticos, as they said.
Yeah.
At the time, you kind of brush it aside. But you look back and think, how didn't we win something?
But most of those players, you won three Grand Slams, didn't you?
Well, I didn't put two. I won two, but yeah, Adam Jones, those guys, the likes of Mike Phillips.
It's
boys.
Just interesting to hear that you felt that you didn't believe you could win Europe.
Yeah, I know. It's bizarre. Now I look at a higher level. What were we thinking?
Yeah, it's hard to channel your energy maybe at two huge competitions. But, the Irish players would have been the Holy Grail was winning a European Cup, but. Mm. I think the first time we won a Grand Slam was 2009.
Yeah.
And it was, how many years before that was it, Jackie Kyle? Was
50
it,
years.
61. So,
yeah.
It just
goes on.
You had a lot of battles back then as well. Ireland and Wales and Ospreys and Munster. The Guinness tagline for tonight is, come as rivals, leave as friends. But there was a lot of spice in those games back in the day in 2009, 2011. What did it feel like that there was I suppose England would usually be the main rivals for both teams, but there was seemed to be a huge
yeah there was because there wasn't many turnover in the teams. There was a lot of players that were kind of playing a lot of games, and the fact the Warren effect as well, the fact like I made my debut for him, then he goes to Wales and you obviously respect the coach that gave you your first cap, and then he's gone into a new territory, and you're wondering what's he really saying to these guys. And it was big battles with with Ireland Wales over the years was, I remember, there was some absolutely brilliant games. Brilliant games, Croke Park. We lost a game to Wales at Croke Park, Sickner. I think it was Wales won the Grand Slam that year, wasn't it?
That was it? That was a big game, yeah.
Well, that was the penalty, was it? That was a penalty at the end. First tackle, no. There was a number of times. One of my worst memories, Shane, is, again, one of your Grand Slam years, is you got on the outside of me, and I was so concerned about your sidestep that I forgot that you're actually quite fast as well.
You forgot about this, didn't you?
Yeah,
so forgot about this.
So I got left behind. As I was catching up, I got near him, and then he fended me hand off right in the face. And then I was asking Tommy, Tommy came back to me next week, and he's like, Shane says that's the only handoff he's ever done.
I was going to say, I remember it vividly, because that was probably the only time I've ever used a handoff. Yeah. And I was like, when you were going down as well, I thought, really?
Silly.
Really? Yeah. So yeah, I do remember that one as well. Sorry about that one.
That's fine. It's just one of those things.
You wasn't as bad as my one. My one in Millennium Stadium. That tops it all, though. Charged down by Gethin Jenkins. He still had about 60 yards to go. He out-sprinted me to the line. And he dived on the ball, and I was trailing after him. And I really just wanted to land my jump right on his head as I came down.
Is that why he threw the ball at you?
If it's a back row or a winger or a centre, you can kind of take when you see the loose head prop.
I'm going to make you feel better now, because in fairness to Gethin, he was an absolute freak of nature.
Yeah, he was.
He was the fittest guy in the
squad. Yeah, great guy too. That's the beauty of rugby, isn't it? The fact that when you get to know these guys after having a few drinks with them, going on Lions tour, spending time with them, he's a great sense of humour. Just so bitter in the morning, but by the dinner time comes, he's a great man for stories. I've been lucky in the fact that, as you said, there was huge rivalry with the Welsh boys, but like I signed is a probably pushing. We got Mike Phillips out of Bayonne up to Racing, resurrected his career, gave him a new life.
A great life.
What a great guy.
Yeah.
Dan Lidiot, chop tackle. Love the chop tackle every day.
Face tackle.
Face plant.
You and Mike used to have some great banter. I remember just listening, because my banter wasn't the best, I've got to be honest. But yours and Mike was pretty good. And I just spent half the game just listening to you and Mike call each other names and, family members and God knows what. And I'd be thinking, that's a bit harsh. And these guys are going to go for it after the game. And then you'd walk out of the change and the first guy's chatting each other on a drink together. It'd be him and Mike. I was thinking, really? Do you remember what he was just calling you 20 minutes ago? It was just bizarre.
Great Mike Phillips got involved in a few Twitter rows as well, didn't he? Remember he got into that row with One Direction? You remind me of Irish one. He called him out, he said, you and the rest of the Beatles will see you after the game or something.
He loves it, Mike.
He has good banter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, there's a picture actually outside Madison Square Gardens, isn't it? Him and Niall just putting up their dukes. But that's Mike. He loves a bit of controversy. He loves he loves a lot of banter.
Yeah.
And loves himself. Even more.
Life in La Rochelle, you do love those kind of relationships with people. Have you got many people down there? Friends, have you settled well into life in France again?
Mike Phillips now straight to La Rochelle. Go on, for me.
Yeah.
Have you made friends?
Is it all work, no play?
Well, work and family, but I have five kids, so
yeah,
it's kind of enough on my plate.
How many of those were planned?
All of them.
The twins and all.
They're 11, imagine.
Wow.
I have an 11-year-old daughter, so...
How different is it?
We're at the mobile phone stage. It's really tough.
Wow.
Holding out, but it's difficult.
Yeah.
That's probably a good description where my life is at the minute. How do I hold off getting two 11-year-olds a mobile phone? We need one for the school bus. Mm. School bus.
One between them.
Are they all fluent?
Yeah. Yeah, it's But you're, as you know, the show goes on, isn't it? 4 years. I finished in 2013, so straight to France. 4.5 years in Paris, 2 years in New Zealand, 6 months now done in La Rochelle. So they have never known Ireland, the kids.
Mm. Are they in a French school? Or
no,
English?
Yeah, sorry. Oh, no, French. Oh, that was the big thing. I think that was the great, incredibly difficult decision at the start, because we were in Paris. We put them into a public French school, which was completely mixed. It was like every nationality of the world, really.
How was that? Because I'm thinking of...
Coming from Cork to that was like... Mm. Honestly, walking out of the schoolyard for the first 4 months, myself and Jess were kind of... Didn't even really walk together, because you're kind of like, hold off those tears, because we're doing the wrong thing. This isn't right. This isn't what it should be like. And after 4 months, it kind of clicks a little bit. You can see that they're... You know what I mean? They can't speak anything. They can't really communicate. It's non-verbal communication for those. I know they're little kids, but they're still people.
I was going to say, Pinar, when he went to Montpellier, he found it very tough. His kids didn't speak a word, and it was every morning, you know, getting them out of the car, them crying their eyes out.
Yeah, it was never that bad. No, for me, they didn't really have that grasping on you. They did for the first few days, but it was like you question everything.
Yeah,
because, you know what I mean, hurt me, but don't hurt them.
Had they been to school in Cork before?
No.
So this is their first experience of school, which is probably helps
exactly
a little bit.
Yeah. You know, it's like, that's 6-7 years ago now, so it's... But it's... it's kind of... Well, we live in Ile de Ré now, which is the island off La Rochelle, but it's connected by a bridge. It's lovely, but it's kind of small.
I've heard it's amazing. You can rent bikes and go
that's
all
exactly
around.
It. Yeah. It would be right up your street.
So they're all fiercely independent, so I'd say, off the back of that, right?
It's kind of cool then when you kind of come home and you're in a different room and you hear your kids arguing in French.
Well,
so that kind of makes you feel a little bit better about the miserable life you're giving them, depriving them of any real friends in Cork.
Well, taking them then to New Zealand as well in the middle of it must have been an incredible experience.
Yeah, and it wasn't great, because the New Zealand kind of education in the schools is kind of, so it was an open schooling, which is very new to me, or maybe to Irish people. So essentially you go in and it's kind of an open plan. So in this section here, we might do a little bit of maths, but there's no classroom. Over here, might do a bit of history and geography. So 80, 90 kids mingling. But I think it also opened the avenues that if you want to play rugby, you just leg out to the pitch or play football or cricket. So my boys they didn't lick it up off a stone, as Jeff said. They were kind of lashing rain. They wear shorts all year round over there. So -2, -3. You have a fleece, shorts, grey socks, and out to the pitch. But so there's a lot of people falling through the kind of loop of, I'll do maths, I'll do history, English, or I'll do sport. So they went to sport, and now they don't do any schoolwork. So we're trying to get the old little one off in 20 minutes a day. And it's kind of not great either when you're being picked up by your teacher for your 7-year-old that he's not doing his devoir, which is his homework, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like...
Shane, did you bring the family to Japan?
Yeah. I was in a similar situation. Obviously, I went to Japan for 3 years, but...
How's your Japanese?
I get by. I come home and I think I've forgotten it, but I was out for the World Cup for nearly 2 months, and, you know, I could get by. I could order food and things like that, the pleasantries and things like that, just about, but it wasn't easy. But it's a tough language, and I had similar problems with the school because my boy was just getting into... coming out of like kindergarten into an all Welsh school. And my daughter was like 2 or 3, she was 2 years into a school that only spoke Welsh first language. And then all of a sudden we put him in like daycare in Japan, and he was all Japanese, and the kids were like, what's happening here?
Right.
You know, mom and dad are speaking English in the house,
and the
teacher's speaking Welsh, and now we've gone on holiday and there's this teacher saying things we don't even know what they're saying. So that was really hard.
Okay. But
I only signed in Japan for, it was meant to be a season. You know, I was meant to go over there and kind of make a relationship between Wales and this club. But I ended up staying 3 years. So after the first year, my wife said, oh, look, Shane, we've got to go home. It's really difficult on the kids. It's hard. I miss back home. We're going home. I was like, oh, okay, no problem. We've given it a go. it's fine, we, you know, enjoy the South Cisco. And she goes, no, not you. You can stay. Take the kids home. I was like, ah, oh, okay, yeah, what are you trying to tell me? But but we made it work, you know. The family went home after year one. I stayed out another 2 years, but I was...
It's a shorter season anyway.
Yeah, though, yeah. It's a short season, right? But don't be fooled, it's a long pre-season.
Okay. Mm.
You play a lot of rugby in between as well, because the rugby teams are company owned, big companies, you know, Coca-Cola, Kobe Steel, Panasonic, you know, big companies with lots of money, but with lots of pull. And that's all they want to do pre-season is, you know, beat Honda in a big game. There's nothing on it. It's a friendly, but then you can say Mitsubishi have beaten Honda. It's quite bizarre in that sense. But then the season starts and the games are played really quickly, you know, every week up until Christmas. But if you haven't got to the promotions, this was my situation, if you didn't get to the promotions, your season was over. And then the more successful you were, the longer you were in the season. So it was quite a bizarre setup, really. But you know, like I say, we kind of made it work.
Did you dominate? Have you seen those clips of Snyman recently?
Yeah.
Was that like you, was it?
Well, yeah, like a better...
The overage player.
3 foot shorter version.
It's ridiculous, isn't it, how much he sticks out?
Yeah.
It's just like...
The rugby is... It was the fittest I've ever been.
Really?
Because they'd have 3 hour rugby sessions. They have a 2 hour rugby session and then they'd be like, right, hour of fitness. And I was like thinking, oh my God, you know, I'm into my 30s now.
Two hours of rugby and then an hour of fitness?
Yeah, yeah, really? Almost every game. It was very old school in that sense. But it seems to have worked for the national team because they're probably the fittest team in the World Cup. And it's played at 100 mile an hour, you know, whenever there's a... and there's a lot of mistakes at the time because when I was there, there's a lot of players that probably didn't have the skill level of you know, the Snymans, the... Manonu's, the Dankard. So the Japanese boys were making a few mistakes. So it was almost turnover, turnover, turnover. Yeah. There was no kicking going on. It was just like from end to end. The rugby was just hectic. But, you know, I enjoyed that. You know, I played off a lot of turnovers, got a lot of space. The legs weren't quite what they were when I was like late 20s, 30s. But
any successful handoffs?
a couple of dips to the shoulder, picking on a few of the boys there, but no, you were the only one. Sorry, but it was fun. It was fun, but yeah, I've been, you know, watching the likes of Dan Carter and, you know, Sonny Bill was funny because even though he didn't play much rugby there, he'd get the ball and he'd kind of ample through a tackle, and you could see he was just waiting for the big offload for the money shot, and he'd like. Go half through and it'll be a nice little flick and the whole crowd will be like yeah. And then they're all watching Sonny Bill in the corner celebrating, but the tries is happening down the corner. Oh yeah, we scored as well, but Sonny Bill did this, you know, and they love that. But yeah, it's just 100 mile an hour rugby. Good fun though.
The coaches, it was three hour sessions, man. So were coaches Japanese or were they
Initially when I got there we had a Japanese who was kind of the director of rugby, who was used to coach college sides back in the 70s, 80s. And again, the whole philosophy is, you know, if you train hard, you're going to play hard and you're going to be the best team. You know, if you train for longer, you're going to be the best team. And he was very old school, but we did have foreign influence in the end. We had Beaver was there, Stephen Donald was out there, Anthony Boric, and Beaver, a great guy, top man, but he doesn't like training. I don't think he likes playing, to be fair. But he's still playing out there, in fairness. But he'd be like, oh my God, you know, we're an hour into training and we've got 2 hours to go. And I was like, yeah, just dig in. This is how they do it. He's like, oh my God, this is killing me. But he's still out there playing. So, you know, he must have loved it in a sense. But mainly there's Japanese coaches with a bit of foreign influence. And we had Craig Green there eventually, who was an ex-All Black who come. And he kind of tapered it down a little bit. But... the powers that be would always go, oh, that was only an hour training. Come on, let's do fitness on the end instead. And the coach was like, all right, I can't do nothing about this. We've got to do it.
Wow.
Yeah, but it was tough. It was the fittest. Honestly, I was the lightest I've ever been and the fittest I've ever been.
Were you breaking down at all? Or?
No, not really. It was
like crying.
I cried a few times. But you know, the good thing was as well, even though they like their foreign influence and players and coaches, you can only have two foreigners on the field at the same time. So, you know, I was either on the bench or I was starting. I was coming off after 40, 50 minutes. So you weren't playing full matches anyway. And it obviously wasn't, the players weren't as big and as physical as I was used to. But, you know, it's
still... You're being very humble. It sounds like it was very easy.
No, it wasn't, honestly. It was, and people would literally, one of the boys would literally throw me a ball. Like, and I'd be behind the races, and they'd look for me, and they'd throw me a ball, and they'd go like, come on, Shane, do something. And I'd be like, whoo! They'd all kind of congregate onto me, and I'd try and do something, and yeah, it was hard. It was hard, really hard. Enjoyed it, I loved it, because it took me back to my roots as well, because I remember my first game for Mitsubishi, our pitch was in the middle of the factory, which was quite bizarre, and we had like 300 or 400 people watching us, you know, so I'd gone from playing the Millennium Stadium, 74,000, a couple of million watching on telly, to, you know, kids and families having a picnic on the side of the pitch, cooking hot dogs. And I was like, oh, this is quite cool, actually. Yeah. I'm quite enjoying the fact that I am going to read the papers on Monday and, you know, Shane Williams was rubbish. You know, six or four out of ten. So it was, yeah, just, it was time to relax and enjoy the rugby again.
There wasn't many Monday mornings you woke up to that. Shane Williams, 4 out of 10.
Talking about Welsh press.
I suppose we better touch on the Guinness Six Nations this weekend. A lot has changed in both camps between since last year, I suppose, when Wales beat Ireland quite convincingly in Cardiff. Raj, what do you think Ireland need to do to beat Wales at the weekend?
I think they need to try and get more tempo in their game. I think there was a, when you look at England France, the contrast and probably speed from the off in that game as opposed to the Ireland Scotland game. And I know Scotland owned the ball for the first 5 minutes against Ireland, but I think the Ireland team, because genetically we don't have monsters really playing the game, we need to play with at a faster speed. Like, I think the three teams coming out of the World Cup for me, obviously, are South Africa, but you have to admire the way that they back their game plan. England, the way I was in the ground to watch them play New Zealand, and a tactical masterclass, really, in terms of attacking, kicking, and finding space against New Zealand. And then I think what gave great excitement and hope as a young coach watching Japan, just how they play as a national team, like their variety in their attack is phenomenal. I think they changed the point of the attack. Like, you don't have to, their aggression at the ruck, but also just clearing the point of contact is very, very interesting. So I think Ireland need to kind of take a little bit out of their book in terms of just having multiple threats. But at the minute, it seems that it's CJ, it's Bundiaki. We cannot seem to go from wide to wide, which... I understand in January it's probably difficult with a wet ball, but it wasn't really a wet ball at the weekend. So for me, the big one would be tempo. And an example of tempo, I think, as I've said 100 times, is how England manipulated Ireland in the Six Nations last year. So kick off, Ireland play a pot of three, set up the box kick to touch, hooker already there, running to the line out, overthrow, Tuilagi, wasn't it, into Van der Fleer. Ruck short side and score. They didn't expect to score, obviously, after three phases, but I think the big one would be tempo.
And that's not, I suppose, just ball in hand. I think I've heard you speak before about living in chaos and teams that can play in that kind of environment.
Yeah, like that's so much of rugby now. Like, it's very hard, I think, unless you have a few... Like Japan, to be fair, a few brilliant starter moves. Like, the defences are more set off first phase. So, like, unless you were the Italian winger and you come up with an absolute crazy decision to not do anything in defence and Wales score in the left-hand corner off a right-hand side line-out, it's hard to score off first phase, really, at this level when you've really good decision-makers in defence that watch the ball now. But I think... So much of the game is chaos or scraps, and that's where you get your mismatches, that's where you get your opportunities. But like, to be good at that, you can't just start scanning on the day. It has to be behaviour that you're working on, and you're kind of probably reviewing and video sessions and kind of going, well, have you seen the space here and who's communicating? So I'd be a big fan of trying to get the comms from outside to in, because if you understand the game, like 9 and 10 are kind of, their vision is quite closed in the fact that the 9 is kind of looking in and around the forwards and the breakdown. The 10 has to have his head on a swivel in terms of, is there kick space here, here or here, or is there run space? There has to be space somewhere. There just has to be. That's not a valid excuse for me. That you,
so there's almost two playmakers that are, well, potentially either side of the ruck.
Trimby would have played in back lines with you know what I mean, with Rico at test level. And honestly, like, so much of the game plan was just the call was Frano. Just a miss 1 to 13.
The ball, yeah.
But there was a reason, because it wasn't as if he had three men on him too. All he needed was kind of one. And if there was a one guy, then, you mean, the next guy can either run an overs or an under off him, or he can throw a miss pass. But I think, and you would understand this better, the best guys I played with were Tupoki and Howlett, because they made me look like a genius at times because of their comms on the run. You know, like talking about, you know what I mean, kick space. So if we're playing this way, your right wing is Doug Howlett and your outside attacker is Tupoki. All he used to ever say was get to him, and then he'd just go plus minus. So plus was what he'd bounce out, and minus what he'd take inside shoulder. If there was with Dougie on your inside, and I remember just so many of his attacking kicks was just when he'd call at the last second, and you're going, oh, great vision from O'Gara. I was just there. No, just great vision from Howlett. Because, like, I have to, you know what I mean? I'm scanning you as my 9 to get the ball, but he's actually on a freebie here inside as a threat or a trail, like Rathe scored against France. Just, I think all the opportunities nowadays are kind of in phase play. I think as a coach, you just get such satisfaction if you're able to score off first phase, you know. First time it's happened was kind of La Rochelle Montpellier. We got 2 tries off first phase, and I'm talking myself up here, which I don't like to do, but it just gave me what you do for the transfer. It rarely happens from Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Jesus, it worked in the game. Yeah, you know, yeah. But like,
I must be very satisfied.
Oh, because you're going, like, it was basically 9 to 12 back to 9, 13 on the short line, 15 out the back. It's exactly how you planned, and 15 got on the outside of the second last, and a little just tip for the winger. He scores untouched. Well, not untouched, but he did a bit of a.
Did you keep your poker face though? Did you? Or were you like, geez, that actually worked?
I can't believe it.
Yeah. I don't know.
How much, Rog, in terms of structure in your sessions, how much of it is unstructured versus the starter plays? The starter plays are your bit as the coach, and you can get protective of them, but you're not developing the player's decision making unless you're actually working on the unstructured.
Very accurate answer to that is be 12 minutes of unstructured and 20 of maps. But the maps take longer, and you'd kind of like to work that. You'd nearly be flipping the time.
Yeah.
But as you know, so much of it too is dictated by GPS and kind of just getting the weekly load right. But unstructured plays is where the game is going.
It's like if you have a couple of freaks on your team, if you have a Billy Van Apol or a Manitoulagi, you can do very, very simple starters, and then you can just play from unstructured after that, because you've probably generally compromised the defence from there. But that's why you're saying about tempo. When you don't have those guys, you've got to do things quickly to try and catch the defence up.
Yes, and England were different without the two Van Apolers, and obviously Toulagi going off. It's just a different team for them, you know. So I think that's why you literally, like, it's how do I get the best out of my players who are playing? It cannot be the same template every week. Like, we have Botia, the Fijian centre.
Oh, just 12 or 6, whichever you want.
You know, like, when have you ever had that, really? I haven't, you know. So, like, you've enough going on in your head during the game, but you're kind of haggling and going, can I get him into the back row for a sneaky Fijian pick and go? You know, the last guy in the ruck. They're just so good at picking that. And it's kind of the one guy, when you're the coach and you're the whistle, you just kind of have to extra be careful. Where is this guy? Because if he hits you, you mightn't get up.
When you have to try and ref the session, yes. And then you're like, oh, I'm coming a short line here in a minute, I'm dead. We had Eddie O'Sullivan on the live show, and we were chatting to him, Shane, because he gave all of us our first caps. But I had to do a game with a media thing with him, and I was anxious going on to it, because I was like, he was real standoffish when he was our coach. Mm. So I was like, oh, this is going to be hard work. And then like Dunica O'Callaghan and Stringer and Tommy Bow were there, and they said, Eddie's a great laugh. And I said, what? They said, yeah, we've done loads of media with him. So I got chatting to him. It was brilliant. He was such a good laugh, and he was a mine of chatting to him about coaching. And then we asked him on the show, because there was this whole thing about Joe Schmidt being here and then Andy Farrell being a bit more relaxed. And I asked him, I said, why were you so standoffish as a coach? And he just said, look, I didn't want to seem like I was favouring certain people, you know? Yeah. But I'd be interested in what way you felt Warren Gatland was, because I got chatting to Mike Phillips about that. And then to ask you, Rog, what you were like from, say, when you first started coaching, what you felt your relationship should be with the players when you started, to after the journey you've gone on to where you feel it is now, and can you be yourself?
I think with Warren, with me, I don't know, I hadn't... He was a very hands-on, as in with the players, player management was brilliant. You know, he was always very honest, open, transparent, but ruthless at the same time. So you kind of had this... For me, he was a mate, you know. He was a mate that I felt that I had to play well for, because even though I was his mate and he was very honest and telling me, you know, I could have scored 2 tries on the weekend and I'd come away thinking, oh, I've done okay. But he'd go, oh, well done on the 2 tries, but missed 2 tackles. So... you know, talk me through the tack, and he'd be like, oh, actually. So there was me thinking, oh, I've done really well, you know, thinking I've had a good game. But not realising, okay, I need to work on this instead. So he'd take you to the side and have a chat and so on. So you always felt very comfortable with him. But in the same sentence, ruthless, he'd come and say, Shane, if you play like that again, mind, George is going to be playing next week. Mm. Or, you know, if you don't train this week, because I don't think you trained last week very well, George is going to come in, but I'm just letting you know, so that, you know, the ball's in your court. And, you know, he was one of those. So even though he was face to face, was great. You also knew as well that, you know, he's there to take your legs away from you if need be. And I quite liked that. I enjoyed the fact that he'd be quite straight. And you know, some players like that, some players don't, I suppose. But yeah, I felt the same with Eddie. I've met him several times, done a couple of, you know, TV work with him as well, and he's almost like a different person, isn't he?
Oh, he's so engaging. Yeah. But, and that's what was frustrating me, because I've had coaches and they, you know, that they're your boss and ultimately they're going to dictate whether you play or not. But and when you don't play, you get pissed off and you get angry at them, but you kind of realise that if he wasn't my boss, I could have a cup of coffee with that guy, I'd go for a drink with him and I'd get on with him. But with Eddie, I didn't know what the guy was like at all.
Yeah.
So I was. That's why I was asking him. I said, I felt he would have got more out of us if I knew what he was like. Raj, I found it really hard at the start when I was coaching, man, going in to try and figure out, like, because I never felt that I would be the right personality for a coach. So I tried to pretend I was someone else to start with. I would be interested, because you have a real good manner with you when you're dealing with people. You're winning over people like Trimby.
Yeah, I suppose I was coming at it from... you leave Munster, you finish in Munster in May, you go to Paris in July, your head is in a spin. Like, first 18 months of coaching, you just saw miss the game. Like, they were there, you're kind of like, where do I put out the cones? People think that's funny, you know what I mean? But, like, I haven't done this in 15 years, I've never done it before. I don't know really how this drill is going to work. It looks all right on paper, but it isn't played on paper, you know? So you're really out of your comfort zone. It's really, really challenging. But I thought, I didn't know anyone. So it was a case of, and my role was different. It was kind of an assistant coach. But the great thing I think that I took out of my career was those kind of last few years when I knew I wanted to be a coach, and the value of the squad. So, you know what I mean, you're 10 years, you're undisputed playing number 10 every week. You don't. You're just like, this is me. This is what I'm meant to do. Then you get onto the bench and you see things so differently. But it was so valuable to appreciate, you know, for example, the Trevor Hogans of Munster when he was there, outside of the, you know what I mean? If you don't manage your 24 to 34, you have no chance. They are the key people for me. These people have emotions, they have feelings, they're really, really important. And you think getting dropped is bad. What about the guys that never make it into the squad? Horrendous. But they have the exact same goals, ambitions as you have. They do the goal setting. They do everything. They do all the hill runs. And you cannot, these guys are absolutely crucial. They, you have to make these feel like kings. So that for me was the biggest thing in terms of learning that at the end of my career about going forward into coaching. I have got to, the guys that are number 3 and 4 in each position are crucial to whether your environment succeeds. And that was just so enhanced going to the Crusaders. Everything is about, the one direction I got from Razor was basically, he trusted me in my unit work because I was only a backs coach, for example. He watched me and he said, that's all right, you do that, but you just got to connect with your players. So everything was about connections, coffees, chats, discussions, growing ideas, but they present. And I was there, nah, nah, Razor. We do it my way. And first 3 or 4 months, you're like, no, I think it's kind of better if I present, you know. I'm good at presenting. I'll do it. But, like, it's just, then you have your pre-meeting. They deliver the key points. It just empowers them. They take the responsibility. They're playing. When they're under the pump, they've got to find solutions on the pitch. There's no point going, well, lads, we discussed this. We said we were doing it. But you just, that's not the way. Again, the rugby isn't played on a laptop. So many coaches think it is. Mm. You have 80 minutes live sport. They're not robots. That's the most important thing for me, I think. So I think, and it's easy for me because I probably feel that you're connected to the thing, but what happens, please God, if we're around in another 10 years and you're the coach, then I would say your probably approach will change, you know, but you feel like that you're quite relative now, but like there's still, I'm coaching guys that are 20 years younger than me. And I can remember when I was doing the leave insert and there was a guy 40, he was there, Jesus, man, he's old, isn't he? You know? Yeah. But like, that's where you're at now. But I think it's...
you can still do it, but you can go out and kick a ball and pass a ball and you can probably do it better than a lot of the players to a degree.
Oh, but that's, it's such a...
But that's going to go in
but
time.
No, but that's, that was the big thing I did well, I think. I just had no interest in kicking. You know what I mean, you become a kicking coach. I've no interest in that. I'll help the guys that have a drive to get better if I can. But for me, it's just, it's like, that's nearly like professional golf. Someone that wants to be a goal kicker or a good kicker, they've got to play an individual sport and then come back into the real world, which is team sport. Because they aren't really applicable. It's like expertise around a tight head getting the scrum right, isn't it? It applies to him. But the whole team suffers if they don't do their job. So that's the beauty of sport in terms of all the key components adding together so you have a jigsaw that's functional. But for me, that was, I think you got to have people who feel valued. Everyone loves a slap in the back. Everyone loves to be encouraged. If you keep telling someone that you're not really good at that, sure, what are they taking home? Get into the car after training going, well, all this guy is saying to me is that this can't be done. You can do it. You just got to kind of, it takes more time than you appreciate to learn or break down habits or skills.
Great stuff.
Right. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. We'll get quick predictions for the game at the weekend. I think it is Six Nations, Afi, and then I know you've got a busy day, so we'll let you rock on.
For the kicking challenge.
Yeah. Shane, who do you think? What are the thoughts in Wales? I know we're kind of hoping that we'll scrape into and get a win.
Oh, look, this fixture is always tough. But one thing that I have noticed is that Wales are no longer intimidated to come into Ireland anymore, and vice versa, unfortunately. you know, we're still picking bits out of the performance against Italy, because I don't think Italy was the best performance by Italian side, and they haven't performed for some time. But we still nilled the team in the Six Nations, and that's a huge accomplishment. Plenty more to come from this team. I'm sure there'll be a few changes made. I'm really impressed with Nick Tompkins when he came on. We've been struggling in the centre, really have. But this one's going to be close. And there are things to improve on from Wales, so I'm going to go Wales just. But I think encouraging for Ireland, I'd say, is that they won a tough game on the weekend without having played much rugby whatsoever. So plenty more to come from Ireland as well, unfortunately for us.
Yeah. Raj?
I think I would have said Wales if Jonathan Davies. I think Wales are different when he plays. I think he has that much of an impact on that team. I think he's a quality player, really, really world-class player. I think Ireland will be significantly better, and they'll need to be. Home advantage for me in the Six Nations is huge. This Irish team, they're not allowed to lose at home. I think that's the mentality they've built. They have the best record at home of all the teams in the last 5.5 years, 5.5 years. So Wales have got better. Bigger has got better. I think he's. It'll be a fascinating battle of the halfbacks. Wales have a lot of good nines again.
It's almost a problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's almost a problem. We don't know which nine we can start with. Now Webb's coming back as well. Mm. And we've got Gareth Davis not involved at all last week. And
the star of the World Cup, really, wasn't he?
Which is bizarre, but at the same time, you've still got two class players on the squad there. So that's one area I think Wales have always been lucky to have strength and depth. Obviously, the back row is going well, but centre's a real problem for us at the moment. So having to put George there. George is a winger as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, me too.
We've got a couple of good wingers playing as well, so it's a predicament, but that is an area we are struggling.
What is the talk? Hadley Parks with Tompkins, is it?
Parks had a niggle as well, so it'll
did
be
he play last
yeah,
weekend? He did, didn't
yeah.
He?
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there.
Okay.
But you put North out, or like McNichol and Josh Adams are going well there?
Well, you can't drop Josh Adams anymore. He's scoring tries for fun. You get that purple patch to do in your career where, you know, second half I was commented and I was in the club. I wasn't commented. I was talking to the boys and said, we haven't seen Josh Adams the second half. You know, he needs to get in the game. Next thing, bang! It's a short ball try.
Yeah.
You're thinking, ah, well, thanks. That's all we need, Josh.
Yeah.
He's had a hat trick. You know, happy days. That's a sign of a player that's on form. Mm-hmm. You know, doesn't always have to be looking and be involved. Whereas George has kind of lost his way a little bit. We're trying to get him in the centre so he gets more of the ball, which he did on the weekend. But still, you know, you could see the difference in calibre and how a centre plays. When Tompkins came on, he looked like a proper centre. You know, running the right lines, running short balls, scores the try as well. So it's hard. And McNichol's one of the form players in the Pro 14. Mm. So sometimes if you're playing well for club, you warrant your opportunity in test level. So it's very hard. I think George is on the cusp now of having to work really hard to get in this team. Mm. And maybe that'll do him good. You know, sometimes you need that kick, don't you, to get you going. So we'll have to wait and see, I suppose. Yeah. On selection, what's the day? I don't know what day it is, but selection will be pretty soon, won't it?
Did we get a prediction out of you, Raj?
I said Ireland just.
Ireland just and Wales just.
Wales just.
That'll do us. Get on the fence. Well, looks, lads, thanks a million for joining us today. Absolute legend. It's been a pleasure. And the best of luck for the rest of the week.
Cheers,
mate.
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Okay, welcome back. And it's time for the Guinness Pint Predictor. I think we should take a look at the Guinness Pint Predictor League table then. Probably not something you want to do, actually, because you didn't do great. But I am second on the table behind Tom Shanklin.
Never heard of him.
Yes,
you are. I don't know why I'm slagging him.
For those of you that don't know, the Guinness Pint Predictor does pretty much what it says on the tin. You predict the winner and the margin of the Guinness Six Nations games every week. And if you're within 3 points, you win a pint of Guinness. Simples.
So last week we set our scores and some of us didn't do so well. You're last.
Me, obviously. I'm second last.
Second last.
Sorry, I'm joint last.
We're playing throughout the championship, so get involved and download the MatchPint app using the league code HORIE, House of Rugby, IE. Mm-hmm. Like the Japanese hooker is a way to remember that.
Well done.
Check out our pretty woeful efforts at predicting the games. We've got some seriously good prizes up for grabs.
Mm. You, I think, predicted England would win by 10 points. That's what let you down.
That's correct.
And you're only in second last place because your name begins with A.
Yes.
So you're in last.
Yeah.
If you are top of the overall table at the end of each round, you'll win Guinness Six Nations tickets. Aidan Dwyer with 59 points finished top of the House of Rugby League for round one. So congratulations, Aidan. You have won two tickets for Ireland versus Wales at the Viva Stadium at the weekend.
Yeah, the three of us are going to be competing against each other in a head-to-head as well every week. So Trimby, unfortunately, this week you've lost. So Pat's going to come up with a forfeit for you. But by the end of the Six Nations, we're going to have an ultimate forfeit for whoever comes last. But
mm-hmm.
Pat, what have you got in line for poor Trimby?
Yes.
delicately
people
holding
can't see the ridiculous microphone that he has.
The Michael Bublé microphone. So this was inspired by a story Trimby told us there last season about having to call Peter O'Mahony and keep him on the phone for 2 minutes. So your forfeit, Trimby, is to... The lads are going to go through your phone book on your phone.
Can I call Pete again?
Yeah, it'd be brilliant if he was to pick up, yeah. And
he probably won't, but we'll try Pete, will we?
But yeah, call away and you have to keep him on the phone for 2 minutes.
He'll know what you're doing,
though, Lee. Yeah.
So then I don't think it should be Pete. Someone that won't know what you're doing.
I enjoy Pete getting a rise out of Pete.
Okay.
Can we call Pete?
We'll call Pete. Molly and Jack, I think. It's wife's game.
Hi, this is Peter. Sorry I missed you. If you leave a voice message or send a text message, I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Thank you.
Okay, shite. He's probably out training. Peter O'Mahony.
His voicemail greeting is so boring, isn't it?
Hi, I'm Pete. Sorry.
What's your voicemail like?
Hi, I'm Andrew.
I want to ring your phone. All right, what about Matt Williams?
Fine, call.
Call Matt Williams. Have you got his number?
Yeah.
Okay, let's do this.
Neil Patrick Francis.
Oh, hey, Matty.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Hi, Matty. It's Trimby here.
Trimby, how you doing?
Yes, all good, Matt. What's the crack?
Oh, good, buddy. Just back in France. I actually thought it was Neil Francis ringing me, so I saw the 353 come up.
Oh, right. Okay, you were waiting to hear from Frano, were you?
Yeah. Wants me to do something on Friday. I got some fundraiser. You know the usuals, mate, you get dragged into.
Yeah. A few nixers around Six Nations.
Yeah, mate. Hey, you did well the other day, mate. You were really good. I didn't get a chance to talk to you afterwards. You're doing a good job.
Oh, thanks, Matty.
What you did.
Thanks, Matty. Some of the feedback wasn't quite as positive, I must be honest.
Oh, really? Who told you that?
Yeah, some people thought I was a little bit wooden and a little bit uncomfortable.
Oh, mate. I can tell you, pal, standing up there in auto queue is the hardest thing to do with this commentary and the TV stuff, man. You did it really well. You get, mate, like everything, you get better at it, pal. But I thought you were really good. We all spoke about it afterwards. How were you?
Yeah, good man. Yeah, it was tricky. I enjoyed your story about Sean Connery, though.
Yeah, mate, you got to laugh, haven't you? You can't take yourself too seriously there.
Yeah, would you keep in touch with Sean at all?
No, I don't think so, mate. I think I watch a few of his movies every now and then.
Oh, good man. It was great to catch you, Matty, because I think whenever you finish playing and you bump into someone you haven't seen in a while, there's a connection. And I'm sorry about the Ulster question. That was probably
not at all.
That threw you, did it?
Not at all, mate. No, it's not a problem at all, mate. As I said to you, I got no problems with any of the boys. Not one of them.
Yeah, we did Matty, we did a live show with the House of Rugby podcast last week in Cork, and we listed a series of Eddie O'Sullivan one-liners, and I think we could potentially do something similar with you, a few one-liners there, Matty.
I'm thinking in particular of the time you called Rory Best a pork chop. listen, Matty, I got to go with the police. The police are behind me here. I need to go. I'll give you a shout back, mate. Okay?
Okay, mate. Bye.
Love you, Matty. Cheers. See ya.
Wow. Man, Matt Williams is a great guy.
Yeah. Well, now I've got to call him back and tell him that I was being mean.
You were stitching him up.
Yeah.
Oh, he came across really well there.
Yeah.
So supportive, man.
That went great.
What did he do?
You know, I might keep in touch with him more often.
What kind of a forfeit is this, man?
Yeah.
Absolutely got your tyres pumped.
Yeah.
It's an uplifting forfeit.
Can I have his number?
People who don't, I genuinely haven't spoken to Matty in years. Right. Saw him last week for the first time.
What's the Sean Connery story?
Oh, he, on the Virgin Media show last week, he said, apparently, famously, he got a hard time from Sean Connery when he was coaching Scotland and they weren't going well. Sean Connery said, you're the fellow that's stuffing up the national team, are you?
That's great.
Yeah.
I think we all might call Matt Williams after the show.
Yeah.
Well done, Matt Williams.
I honestly do. I know I got, the whole thing was supposed to be a bit of fun. I honestly do find whenever you see guys that you played with, there's a connection, and there's it's always, wow, I didn't expect that whenever I saw Matty out of the blue on the show, because we hadn't chatted before. When he came on, it's like, it is actually great to see you. I find that with Rog, and not so much Shane, because I didn't really know him.
Wouldn't know him as well.
But you know what I mean?
Got that fend on you.
Yeah.
Man, the fact that the minute you brought it up, he started doing this.
Yeah.
He started doing this with his hand, he knew.
Yeah.
Someone said, oh, you're going on this rugby podcast with Barry Murphy and Andrew Trimble and Jerry Flannery. He goes, Trimble, oh yeah.
Yeah.
That one with the pen.
He can still see you and he thinks you, he looks down.
Yeah.
He was like that.
I love in the back, I watched it last night actually just.
Oh, did you?
Randomly watched it on YouTube as the news coming on, and then in the background you're slapping the ground like just so broken by the fact.
Oh, really? Oh, sorry, the fan.
Yeah.
Oh, really? You watched it?
Yeah, I watched it and you're just
how bad was it? Throwing a tantrum?
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Yeah. It's fine.
It was a good handoff. Wasn't a great tackle.
All right.
Yeah. But look, as you said, he's Shane Williams. He's done that pretty much. Well, he's danced around everyone.
He's not done that.
He's the only one.
It's the first time he's done that.
Alrighty, that is a long show, but it was thoroughly enjoyable. Thank you all for listening, and for those of you watching, hello, on YouTube. But before I do that, we have to do our predictions. I forgot about this. Okay, for next week, new round, all to play for Trimble. you think you can win round two? You got to redeem yourself?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Find this one very, very difficult to call.
Okay. Ireland, Wales first. Yeah.
Ireland, Wales. I'm probably inclined to go Wales.
Okay.
By 2 points.
Ooh. Jir?
Wales by 3.
I'm going to go Ireland by 6.
Nice.
We'll see. Scotland versus England.
I think England will bounce back a little bit. England by 6.
Mm-hmm.
England look really, really bad. I can't see Scottish packs handling. I was wrong last week. I didn't think the Scottish pack would front up like they did. I still think England. I think England by 7.
Okay, can I give a draw? I can, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm gonna go draw.
Ballsy.
Yeah.
France versus Italy.
France by 17. Sorry, where is that game?
France.
18.
I think France by 20.
Okay, I'm going to go France by 29. Done. Come on. Jesus. Okay, that's there are predictions. Although we want all of you to get involved in the Guinness Pint Predictor as well, so download the Match Pint app and use the
what was that? Download
the Match Pint app and use the league code HORIE to join. Now we can finish the show. That was a long ass show. Cheers everybody for listening. Thank you to everyone for watching on YouTube. Thank you to everyone involved in the show today, to Pat, to Paul, to Ian, to Fiona, to Anthony, to Raj, and to Shane, Jerry, Trimby.
To Matt Williams.
To Matt Williams. This has been Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby, here on Joe, together with Guinness. Party on.
Party on.
Party on.
You were listening to Baz and Andrews, House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.